Well, hello and good morning. Welcome to Epic Sensitives. I am Angie Milgate, the Phoenix, and your hostess for the next hour. And I'm really grateful to be here with you today. Thank you for your feedback on previous shows, for reaching out to me, and for sharing your ahas that you've been having, and your awarenesses that have been coming up, and the ways that life has shifted for you as you have listened to this show and have incorporated some of the things that I talk about here, as well as following up on things that I send out through my newsletter every other week. And I just really, really appreciate how interactive you guys are. It's super, super cool. And I love being on the air again. It feels like home. I took a long break and I'm back, and this is the third show that I've done, and it just feels incredibly powerful to be here. So some of the ways that you can connect with this show, if you follow this show, which is Epic Sensitives on Block Talk Radio, obviously, if you follow this show, then you will receive updates of when we are airing and what we'll be talking about. In the near future, I will be bringing on people that are guest speakers that will be talking about, we'll be having open chats with these geniuses that have powerful gifts to share with you and tools and skills that they will share to support you in creating an epic life that is powerful beyond measure. Some of these radio shows will be offered at a different time than the standard Friday morning show. So if you follow this show on Block Talk Radio, you'll get notifications of when there are shows scheduled at interesting times. Another way you can connect with me through the show is if you're my friend on Facebook, you can do a private chat there. You can pop up a private message and it will pop up at the bottom of the screen to let me know that you're listening and if you have questions. Also, you can connect through the phone lines. This does not mean you have to come on air. However, if you have a question that you want to come on air about, this is how you would do it. You call in to area code 646-787-8475. Again, that number is 646-787-8475. You can listen online or listen on the phones there if you have to leave your computer. Another fun way to connect, and it probably is by far my funnest way to connect with listeners, is in the Blog Talk Radio chat room. If you go to the link at blogtalkradio.com, down in the on the homepage of the blogtalkradio.com website, there is a live chat box that you can click on there that'll show the Epic Sensitives. You can also get to the chat room from the Epic Sensitives radio page, and I would love to have you connect in there. It becomes a very interactive space as we build the Epic Sensitive family. This morning I'm drinking some yogi tea, a vanilla spice energizing tea. I love it because I like the warmness that fills my belly as I'm talking and soothes my throat as my words come through. So who am I? You may be wondering. I am the Phoenix. This means that I embody the energy of life, death, life, and I support Epic Sensitives in developing clarity about who they are, why they are here, and what their path is, what their purpose is. Often Epic Sensitives come to me and the very first thing they say is, I don't know what I'm doing here. Or another way that comes through is, I feel like an alien. Or all of these other people, they're aliens. This is a very weird place. And so I support Epic Sensitives and getting clear in what does it mean to be a divine creature having a human experience? How do we be human and divine at the same time, because my awareness has been that when we divide ourselves and be either love and light, so divine, or be human, then we're cutting off very significant parts of ourselves. So my purpose as the Phoenix and as the one that is chosen to lead out the epic sensitive, my purpose is to remind you of who you are. I'm able to actually see divine energy and actual creation, the creation moment of when you were sparked into life, when your soul was sparked into life. And so I'm able to put into words some things that you may not be able to even comprehend. But once you hear them, it becomes this, oh, yeah, that's what that was. That's what that is. Oh, that's why I do it. So I am a space of awareness and acknowledgement of who you are, so that you can become that space for yourself. So today we're going to be talking about hell. And I love the experience that I have at times when I use words like hell or when I use swear words, because I have a sailor's mouth. I love to talk with swear words. And I actually remember the very first time I consciously chose to swear. I was 12 years old, and I was raised in a construct that swearing was bad. We didn't even say hell or damn, even though some people around me said that was okay because it was in the Bible. But I was raised to not swear at all. And it's interesting, when you're raised in a construct of the construct that says some words are quote unquote bad, when you are a wordy wordsmith like I am, someone that is a storyteller and has a very deep and passionate love affair with words, when you're told that some of those words are forbidden, it makes it really tempting to use them all the time just to rebel against the system. At least it did for me. And so when I was in sixth grade, my friend and I were waiting at the bus stop. It was a Monday morning. We had had a lesson in church the day before about how important it was to be upstanding young ladies. And one of the ways to be upstanding young ladies was to not swear ever. And she and I challenged each other to say the F-dash-dash-dash word. And so while we were waiting for the bus to arrive, we were whispering fuck in each other's ears just to say it out loud for the first time in our lives. And I remember the sense of being utterly naughty and knowing in that moment I was totally going to go to hell. And at the same time going, woohoo, I did it. I said those bad words. I said the baddest word of all. And so as I've gone through my journey of awakening and my journey of remembering who I am, swear words, quote unquote, swear words have become a part of my empowerment process. Because I believe if you hold something in a space of being bad, whether it's a person, an action, a behavior, a word, if it's bad, then it has to become separated from you, or you have to separate from it. And then you're creating a division within yourself. When actually what our goal is to be whole, to be in remembrance of our wholeness. And so when we practice division, even if it is separating ourselves from hell, then we are creating a gap in our wholeness. We are actually creating the experience of being incomplete, unwhole. So I got really curious about the dark. I am a fan of the dark. Part of the reason why I consciously chose to embody the Phoenix is because of her power of transformation that actually comes through the dark, that actually comes through death, dying in the dark. A lot of my work takes place in the metaphysical, metaphorical dark, as I'm supporting Epic Sensitives in uncovering what it is that is stopping them. What is the root cause of their fear? Why are they so afraid of, quote unquote, the dark? And as I, over the last, especially the last 5 or so years, I have become aware of here in Salt Lake City, there is becoming a division in the world of energy healing and in the spiritual communities. There is a faction of the spiritual communities that firmly believes that the only thing you need to focus on is love and light. And my experience of these groups of people is that they are so solidly focused on the love and the light that they're actually forgetting about their shadow self, about the part of them that is divinely human. So this dimension that we're in, the third dimension, Earth, is the realm of physicality. This is where humans rule. They have the last say on what goes on in this planet, which is part of the reason why we are in so much turmoil right now, is because of what humans have decided is going to be in existence over the course of centuries here on this planet. And so the argument of the love and lighters, which is what I affectionately call these people that are focused on the fifth dimension, which is the dimension of spirit and instant manifestation, well, what these love and lighters are attempting to do is to raise the vibration of humanity. However, my understanding and awareness of what it means to ascend means that it's not just our spirit or our soul that ascends, it is also our humanness. The goal of ascension is to raise the human vibration, not just the spirit vibration or the soul vibration. Because in truth, the spirit is already divine. It is already vibrating at the fifth dimension and higher. It's our human selves that are heavy and dense because we have so bought into the construct of Earth. So what I've noticed is on this planet, the archaic constructs of power, control, anger, domination, and fear, well, the constructs of power, control, and domination have led to a pervading energy of fear and anger, which has resulted in ongoing conflict, ongoing turmoil, ongoing tension, and many wars. And the wars have all been in the name of I am right, you are wrong. And if you break down every single war, that's what it boils down to. We're right, we know better, you're wrong. You need to do it our way. And so I've been really aware of this concept of what does it mean to be love and light and dark and shadow? How do we embrace the duality of humanity without ignoring the duality of humanity? That's part of what the love and lighters are focusing on, is they're focusing on the positive, the love and the light, but at the same time, they're ignoring the pain, the violence, the abuse, the illness, the disease, the disorder that is rampant in humanity. You cannot heal something by ignoring it. Let me repeat that. You cannot heal something by ignoring it. If you think about your physical body, if you get a cut, say you cut yourself on the serrated edge of a can that had meat inside of it. So it was canned meat, and you were cutting it open, and you cut your hand severely on that edge. Now, if you left that wound uncleaned, it's very possible that you could get an infection. Now, your body will consciously choose to fight that infection, but if you continue to not treat that infection, it'll spread. And the gapes, your body will fight to heal the gaping wound, but if it's too big, it can't stitch itself back together. It requires attention. It's why we have Western science or Western medicine to help us sew our limbs back on when we accidentally get them chopped off. It requires attention. It's the same thing for the metaphysical realm. If there's something, a core belief, a DNA program, an archaic belief that is running your life in your subconscious mind, if you continue to ignore it, well, you'll continue to do the same thing. And if you continue to do the same thing, you'll get the same results, which is, you know, the definition of insanity is trying to do, is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So we know that if we continue to do what we've always done, we're going to get what we've always gotten. When you choose to focus on all that is positive and light at the expense of and by ignoring all the pain that you're experiencing, all the disease and disorder that you're experiencing, all of the emotions, which often humans seem to equate with darkness, if you ignore all of that, then you lose the power, you become disempowered to heal it, to transform it, to transmute it from darkness to light. So what does it even mean, the word hell? I got really curious about this, and if you've been here a while or followed me for several years, you know that as a wordy wordsmith, I often like to find the core root meaning of words, where they started, what they meant when they started, because over time, humans' perception changes, therefore the words they use change, and the assigned meaning changes as well. However, the originating energy of a word remains. And that's part of the reason why I love being a space of clarity when it comes to working with epic sensitives, and because I can hear when they're using words that are not in alignment with the message that they're actually saying. What they're saying and the energy of what they're saying is not actually matching. So I looked up the word hell, being very curious about what it originally meant. And what I discovered is originally the word hell evolved from the word Helan. And I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's spelled H-E-L-A-N, which actually means to conceal. So originally the word hell conveyed no thought of heat or torment, but it was simply a word that meant to conceal or cover over. There is an old English expression of helling potatoes, which actually meant not to roast them, but to put them in the ground or in the cellar. So originally, you can see that the word hell meant to hide, to conceal, to cover. So as it evolved, hell came to stand for the Hebrew word sheol in the Old Testament. That's spelled S-H-E-O-L, and I'm pronouncing a Hebrew word with an English construct, so it's possible that I'm slaughtering the pronunciation of that word. But that word meant the abode of the dead. Again, it was just a place where the dead went. It didn't say that there was moral laws that got you there. And it didn't say that there was fire. It just was a place the dead went to. In the New Testament, the word hell was used to replace the word the name Hades for the Greek god Hades. So As you can see, hell has transmuted, it has transformed over time, and it has transformed into a very dark, and well, not dark, it's very bright because of all the fires, a hot and fiery place that's really scary and full of torment. As it progressed, there's in the Grolier Universal Encyclopedia, hell is described as this. Hindus and Buddhists regard hell as a place of spiritual cleansing and final restoration. Islamic tradition considers it as a place of eternal punishment. The idea of suffering after death is found among the pagan religions and teachings of ancient peoples in Babylon and Egypt. Babylonian and Assyrian beliefs depicted the netherworld as a place full of horrors, presided over by gods and demons of great strength and fierceness. Although ancient Egyptian religious texts do not teach that the burning of any individual victim would go on forever, they do portray that the other world, quote unquote, other world, features pits of fire for the damned. So, it was the Babylonians and the Assyrians, it sounds like, that began the theory that hell is a place for the damned and it's full of fire. Now, a lot of the confusion over the word hell has come as people have translated sacred scripts, sacred books, and they've put their own spin on it according to what they understood at the time. Now, that is how everything in life evolved. It is based on what we understand at that time. What is our understanding? What do we believe is happening? So why do we fear hell? How do we create hell? And what can we learn from hell? I came across this story called The Sun and the Night that I want to share with you. All right, boys and girls, it's time for stories. So once upon a time, there lived people who loved the light. As soon as the sun rose every morning, they were up to welcome it, singing songs of celebration for the light. And when the sun went down each evening, they sang other songs, sad songs, songs of missing the light of the sun. They loved the light so very much. They did not love the darkness. Once darkness fell every night, they would hurry to bed since they could only bear the darkness when they were asleep. Even then, total darkness was frightening to them, and so they always kept a fire burning in every room. The people's dearest wish was that the sun would not set in the evening, that darkness would never fall. But every day, the sun set, and they sang their sad songs, and they endured the fearful, sad, strange darkness until they could greet the sun again the next day. Now, in this land were born two remarkable children. They were twins. One was a girl, and she seemed to shine from within. Whenever she entered a room, everything seemed to get a little brighter, and the people loved her very much. The other was a boy, and he seemed to bring darkness with him. Whenever he entered a room, everything seemed a little dimmer, and the people did not like him. They feared him because he reminded them of the great darkness of the night. But although the people loved the girl and did not love the boy, the twins loved each other very much. And because the girl loved her brother so very much, the people mostly let him be, even though they were very afraid of him. Now, as they grew, it became clear that these children were, in fact, magical children. The girl had the power to bring life back when it was harmed or lost. When she was a very small child and she could heal small cuts and bruises. When she grew a little older, she could heal broken bones and other hurts. And by the time she was a teenager, she could make the crops grow faster and larger and fuller. She could bring plants and animals that had died back to life. The people suspected she could even bring people back to life, but they were a little afraid to ask, and she did not offer. The boy, on the other hand, had the power to calm and quiet anything. When he was a very small child, he could help his family go to sleep more quickly, thus saving them from the fear of the darkness. When he was a little older, he could calm animals when they were frightened and make them still. Sometimes he would go first to an animal or a person who was hurt and help them to be calm enough for his sister's healing magic to work. And by the time he was a teenager, he could calm storms and winds and rains. He could bring anything to stillness. The people's love for the light and fear of the darkness only grew with time, perhaps more strongly with the twins always before them to remind them. And so one day, they decided to ask the girl for a favor. All right, everybody take a breath. Okay, whoever it is whose throat is closed out of fear because of whatever happened in the dark that has locked you into an utter terror about the dark, I invite you to breathe. I invite you to look around you and see the dark. But more importantly, look around you and see the light. Take a breath. Put your hand on your throat. Gently, without force, place your hand there gently at the bottom of your throat as you breathe. And say to yourself, I am safe. I am safe. I am safe. And just keep breathing as I finish this story. The people's love for the light and the fear of the darkness only grew with time, perhaps more strongly with the twins always before them to remind them. And so one day, they decided to ask the girl for a favor. They asked her to see if her magic could hold the sun in the sky and stop the night from coming. The girl was reluctant, but after many, many months of being asked, she finally decided to try, just to get the people to leave her alone. One day, as the sun was at its highest point, she went out onto the top of the highest hill in the land, threw up her arms to the sky, and asked the sun to stop, to stay right there at the top of the sky forever. She wasn't immediately sure that anything had happened. The sun usually moves so slowly, but before very long, it became clear that something had happened. The sun had stopped in the sky. The people were overjoyed. There was a big celebration. They sang all of their songs celebrating the sun. They loved the girl even more, at least at first. For the first week or so, everyone was happy and content. But soon, they began to get tired. Although they had always slept with the fire to ward off the darkness, sleeping in the full light of the sun was another thing altogether. They tossed and turned and woke up constantly. Some of them remembered that the boy could help with sleep and asked for his aid, but his power of bringing sleep seemed to have disappeared along with the darkness. After about a month, the exhausted, frustrated people began to see that this constant sunlight was a problem. Though they still loved the light, they began to wish that the sun would once again move in the sky. Each person at first thought they were the only one who thought this, and given the people's love of the light and fear of the darkness, everyone was afraid, at first, to say anything about this growing longing for nighttime. But slowly, softly, as they began to confide in each other, they discovered that everyone felt this way, and they finally decided that something must be done. They went back to the girl and asked her to get the sun to move again. It was her magic that had stopped it, and they figured her magic could make it move again. So she went back up onto the hill, threw her arms to the sky, and asked the sun to move. Nothing happened. She tried again. and a third time, but the sun stayed still. Sadly, she turned to the people and told them there was nothing she could do. There was a long moment of growing panic before the boy stepped forward. "Let me try," he said softly. Everyone thought about it for a moment and then decided this was a good idea. So he took his sister's place at the top of the highest hill, threw his arms up to the sky, and asked the sun to move. The sun began moving at once, rushing toward the western horizon. Within 10 minutes, it had set, and within 15 minutes, it was full dark night. The people were caught off guard. They had come out to the hill to see if the girl's magic would work. They'd set no fires. They hadn't needed them in weeks. They had nothing with them to light their way. They had never been outside at night before. They were terrified. At first, they tried rushing home to get away from the darkness, but they soon discovered that rushing, when you can't see where you are going, is a very bad idea. They slowed down, but still peered at the ground, trying to get home as soon as they could. But then, one of them looked up. "Oh!" she exclaimed. "Look!" Everyone looked up, and they all saw the stars for the first time. They had never been outside at night before and had no idea of the incredible beauty of a sky full of stars. They all stopped hurrying toward their homes and stood and stared in wonder. And then they realized how very tired they were. So slowly and with more reverence, they started home again. They all slept for a very long time. Okay, whoever, we're almost done with the story. Take a breath. Look around you. Gently put your hand on your throat. I am safe. I am safe. I am safe. The people rested and were glad and appreciated the darkness for the first time in their lives. Eventually, the sun rose again. As it did, the people got out of their beds and sang their songs to celebrate the coming of the light. But at the end of the day, as the sun began to sink toward the horizon, they did not feel like singing their sad songs. Instead, one of the musicians began singing a new song, a slow, quiet song of thanksgiving for the night. And soon the others joined in. It became their new sunset song. And the boy and the girl grew up to be a man and a woman, and both of them were now much beloved by the people. Looking at them, still the best of friends as well as siblings, the people remembered that the light and the darkness are best in balance. The reason why I love that story so much is because it talks about the progression of shifting your perception from dark to light, from hell to happiness, from imprisonment to liberation, from fogginess to clarity. It literally is shifting the way you look at something, shifting the way you experience something based on old patterns, beliefs, DNA programs, thoughts. You can literally shift your experience of the darkness, your experience of hell, of being in hell, by shifting what it is you're telling yourself. Just like the couple times as I was reading that story, and I could feel the waves of fear rising in you, whoever it was or whoever they were, that I could feel that fear of the dark rising. When I asked you to breathe, when I asked you to place your hand gently on your throat and to remind yourself that you are safe, as soon as you did that, the energy of the story, the energy of that moment shifted from one of utter fear to being an experience of safety. You have within your power the ability to shift everything that you are experiencing in that moment by shifting the way you look at it. I want to share with you an experience I had just this morning. I had one of those mornings where my alarm clock went off at 4:45 so that I could get up and have my sacred me time and go running, which is spelled W-U-N-N-I-N-G, which is my word for walking, running, that I now do. When it went off at 4:45, I was like, oh my gosh, and I was so tired. I was in the middle of a very active dream, lots of stuff to figure out in the dream, lots of running, lots of chasing, a lot of not figuring out what needed to be figured out. And so I woke up in a state of that. I was rather exhausted. And as I was reaching over to turn off my alarm, that movement alone, going from laying on my back to rolling over to reach for my alarm, was like, oh my gosh, I can't do it. I was so tired. And for one moment, I laid there going, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. I cannot get up and do this. I'm too tired. And then in the back of my mind, or somewhere in my mind, I remembered how important it is to me to spend time with myself, focused on health as a verb, which has been my focus for this year, and to actually take time for me, and how that has shifted my entire perspective of life. It has shifted how I am experiencing life, because I start out with me each day. And that memory was enough to go, okay, Angie, you can do this. You can get up. So I sat up. Usually I stretch before I get out of bed, but I didn't have the energy to do that. And I knew that if I laid there too long in my bed, I wasn't going to get up at all. And so I set down my alarm, got out of bed, shuffled to the bathroom, brushed my teeth. Brushing my teeth usually helps me to wake up. This morning it didn't. And I just kept saying, you can do this, you can do this. When I go running, I listen to audiobooks, and I usually put both earbuds in so I drown out distractions. Today I had the nudge to leave my right earbud out. So I was actually hearing stuff that was going on in the outer world. I could hear the birds chirping. I could hear the world coming awake. That was a new experience for me in my ritual of wanting. I got halfway around the park, and I was halfway on the way back. So I had gone about 3/4 of the way. And I was wanting along and heard a sound that I hadn't heard before at that time of the day in the park. And it caught my attention because it was out of the ordinary. And I slowed down enough and quieted my steps so that I could actually gain awareness of what it was that I was hearing. And I suddenly realized there was a man somewhere in the park singing. I couldn't understand his words, but his voice was deep. It was one of those resonant voices that are deep in the chest. And I could hear it. I could almost feel it more than I could hear it. And I couldn't see the man. He was coming from inside the depths of the park, or his voice was. And I was on the outskirts of the park on the walking track. And so I stopped and I faced into the dark because I had this moment of, ooh, I want to write about this experience of having something come to me in the dark and not being able to see it, but to feel it and to hear it, because that is a very common occurrence for the epic sensitives I work with. They're not able to see what it is that they're picking up on it, but they can feel it and they can hear it. And so I was going to write about that. got my phone out because it helps for me to take a picture of the moment and jot down some notes so that I can write about it later. Got out my phone, turned to face the center of the park, the dark core of the park, because at night they only light up the exterior of the park, and then there are sparse lights placed throughout the park, but it's generally a very dark core in the park. So I turned to face the core of the park where the voice was coming from, and I held up my phone to that darkness, and I glanced down at the screen and realized I could see all the trees. And in the past, when I've taken pictures of the darkness, all I've gotten is a black screen with hints of shadows. And I figured that was what I was ready for. I figured that's what I was going to see. But as I looked down in the screen, I realized I was seeing trees. And I was like, oh my gosh, how am I seeing trees? How am I seeing that building? Why can I see the plants? And suddenly I followed my eyes followed the shadows of the screen, or not the shadows, the shapes of the screen. And at the top of the screen, the sky was blue. It was a faint blue, but it was blue. And I was like, oh my hell. It's not dark, it's actually light. It is actually light. And so there were a couple of things that I experienced that in that moment. First of all, I had so firmly believed I was in the dark that I was in the dark until I actually paid attention to what really was going on in that moment. In that moment, it was light. In that moment, it was twilight. There was enough light in the sky, even though the sun had not yet officially rose, and it wouldn't for another half hour. It was close enough to the horizon line, to the top of the mountains, that there was enough light in the sky that I could see the mountains when I looked at them. I could see the outline of the trees and the branches. It just wasn't dark shadows. I had so firmly believed that I was in the dark. I was in the dark. So there is a quote by Ford that goes, if you believe that you can, or if you think you can, or you think you can, you are absolutely correct. The power of your mind is it can convince you of anything. This morning, I was firmly convinced that I was in the dark. And for those of you that have listened to my radio show for a couple weeks now, you know I've been playing with this concept of darkness and light. And what does it mean to be in the dark? What does it mean to be in hell? And what does it mean to be in the light? And how can we gracefully shift from one to another and incorporate and honor both in our world as we are divinely human creatures? So one of the words that I really loved is the word illuminate, which means to light things up or to make things clear. And another thing that I love, one of my favorite definitions of the word illuminate comes from a practice that was done in the Middle Ages, where they made ancient scripts. They decorated them with gold and silver and vibrant colors and created this gorgeous artwork along with the words of the script. And so the definition is to make resplendent or illustrious. Those words, resplendent and illustrious, those are words that embody the experience of richness, of wealth, of abundance. So when you illuminate something, you bring richness and abundance to it. The light cannot destroy the dark. It can only illuminate it. The dark cannot destroy the light. They cannot destroy one another. They can only change the quality of what it is that you're experiencing in that moment. As epic sensitives, you probably experience moments where you feel very unclear, moments of uncertainty, moments of wondering what in the hell you're doing on this planet. One of my favorite tools for shifting perception, for shifting the perspective that you're looking at things, for shifting your experience from dark to light, from hell to liberation. One of my favorite tools is powerful questions. So some of the powerful questions that I like to use, I have written about this in the past. I haven't spoken about it on the radio show, but I probably will later on in this year as I enter this. As the phoenix, so I'll back up a little bit. As the phoenix, I have a very visceral process that I go through each winter where I literally go into the dark and unearth what it is that needs to be transformed next for myself and for those I'm working with. And for several years, in the beginning of being the phoenix, this dark period was very scary, very lonely, and something that I beat myself up about. And it's just been in the last couple of years that I've seen the power within this dark period, because when I consciously go into what I call the void or the nothing, there is literally nothing there with me. I am in the dark. And I have had to choose to shift my perception of what that means. What does it mean for me to be in that dark space where I am alone, quote unquote, alone? I don't bring humans into my realm, into my physical space when I am working with the nothing, because my focus is so intent on that death, dying, darkness period of my process that I don't want to split focus. In fact, the only person that has successfully traveled with me through the nothing has been my daughter. She's the only person that has that I have been willing to allow into that space on an ongoing period. So one of the powerful questions that I developed last year while I was in the nothing was, what is it that I need to see that the light is not landing on? So part of what is so intense about being in the dark or being in hell, being in a space where you cannot see the way forward, being in a space where you feel confused or unclear, part of the power that is inside that is you are in a space where the light is not. So the light is not hitting what it is that you need to see. And that can be fearful. As children, we make that dark space where there is no light, we make that the space where the monsters are. And so when we grow up to be adults and we're trying to understand why some of these weird behaviors are happening, and we realize they're linked to the quote-unquote dark or the hell that we went through as children, often we will choose to refuse to do that work because we are so terrified of the monsters that we have buried in the dark. However, when we choose to willingly go into the dark and to bring a source of light, like the phoenix is who I bring with me into the dark when I am in the nothing. She is who I bring with me when I go into the dark with a client. When we go on those treasure hunts, the hunts of discovery to uncover what that gold nugget is that is hiding in the gut of the monster that we've buried in the dark. So when I'm in the nothing, I am unearthing monsters for myself, for those I work with, and for humanity at large. I'm unearthing those monsters so that I can gut them and find the gold, to find the nugget, the message, the light that has been swallowed in the darkness. Now, I said earlier, the darkness cannot destroy the light, nor can the light destroy the dark. They can consume one another, but they cannot destroy one another. When the light and the dark are in balance, there is harmony. When the light and the dark are in balance, there is harmony. Now, part of the reason why this planet is in so much turmoil is because we are fighting and dividing. We are separating ourselves from one another. We are separating ourselves from our source. We are separating those who we judge to be bad from those we judge to be good. Now, here's the thing. Notice it requires judgment to decide if someone is bad or someone is good. It requires judgment to see where a person is going based on what your belief is of heaven and hell. There are many of you who believe that the President of the United States is leading us to hell. What if we shift our perception and see the light that is in even that person? Many of the people who follow me have a very, very strong spiritual belief. More often than not, they are spiritual more than religious, even if they have a religious construct that they are in worship of with. They still have a very strong spiritual belief in a higher power, whether they call that higher power God, Allah, Buddha, Spirit, Universe, Higher Self, Source, Science. Those are all words for an organizational power that has created all that we are, all that we see, all that we have. When you honor within you that energy, that powerful, creative energy that you be in every molecule and every strand of your DNA, you are creation. When you honor that implicitly, there is no way you can divide yourself from another human. When you choose to see hell, darkness, Satan incarnate in another human, you are dividing yourself. There is no consequence for the person you are judging. It doesn't change them. It only changes you. You are the one that experiences the consequences because you are dividing yourself from humanity. I know that this concept that I'm sharing is a very big stretch for you as an epic sensitive, because I am asking you to embody the teachings of Jesus Christ, which is love one another. When he was on this planet, his message was to love one another, to embrace one another. He did not see differences. He chose to stand up and stand with those who were being judged by humans. The concept of those of you who have not sinned are the ones that can throw the first stone. Think about that. In what ways have you embodied darkness? In what ways have you chosen to be hell? How have you stuck yourself on this planet in a space of darkness and hell? Why are you creating that for yourself? How is it serving you? When we choose to create hell, darkness, confusion for ourselves, we create something to fight against. When you're fighting against something, you're dividing yourself. I have seen options of what is possible for our future as a human race. I have seen some of what is coming for us as a human race. And as long as we continue to choose to fight against ourselves, which is what we are doing when we decide we can be the judge, the jury, and the executioner for any other person, place, or thing, we are dividing amongst ourselves. We are creating division from within, and a house that is divided will fall. So my empowering invitation to you today is this. In what ways can you be the light and the dark, honoring both within yourself, thereby honoring both within every person you encounter, every experience you go through, everything you hear? How can you embody and embrace and honor the dark and the light, even when it comes to abuse? How can you choose to be the light and the dark and stand up for the eradication of abuse on this planet, to stand with me in the progression of healing this planet? We heal this planet by focusing on balance. We focus on balance by recognizing all that we are, all that we are capable of. All the light, all the dark, all the heaven, all the hell that we embody. Everything that we believe is someone else is actually us. Thank you for being with me today. Feel free to share this show. Reach out and connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/epicsensitive. So facebook.com/groups/epicsensitive. If you'd like to schedule a connecting call with me, a free 30 minute call, then reach out at connectwiththephoenix.com so I can learn how I can best be a support to you. Thanks for being here. I love you, Epic Sensitives. Create yourself a beautiful day, and we'll see you next week at the same time. Bye-bye.